Welcome to the Growler, a Hootay podcast hosted by Paul Dana and other bald friends like Mo Egger, Dave Nanametz, home of all your Bengals breaks, takes. Welcome to the Growler.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the Growler. It's Balds Don't Lie, but only one bald today because we're kind of recording a little early. I'm taking vacation next week, so fellow balds, Mo and Dave, not with me, but a beautiful head of hair on the other side. Our great friend, draft guru, Mike Renner. Mike, what's up, buddy?
Paul, great to be back on. It's been a minute here, and unfortunately, not going to be able to do it in person. I'm not in Cincinnati anymore.
I know. Well, it's all right. You're living the strong Nashville life. I respect it. We get what's like an annual Bengals trip down there every year. Somehow it's like they're in the AFC North. And it's been great for us from a scribe perspective. Love getting a random in and out with Nashville where I don't have to deal with the fallout from my actions over the course of a weekend, but get to enjoy a good couple of nights. So it's good.
Yeah. And you get there in the fall too, and you don't get bogged down with all the bachelorette parties. If you're there in like the summer or spring, it's nasty down here then.
I won't go into, I have a whole rant about this, but I've never seen more forms of pedal wagon. Like the industry has grown in Nashville so much. At one point I thought I saw like an armored tank wagon that had just a bachelorette party. I mean, it seems like they've leaned a little too hard into the bit where you can't drive around if you don't have at least 14 people all dressed the same singing.
Yes, there's the innovation in the pedal wagon industry here is off the charts. I mean, you see more of those than you see cars on the road at times.
And I appreciate it. Let's, as much as people are here for pedal wagon talk and analysis, we're here to, I want to set the stage. Free agency fully in the rear view for the Bengals now. I don't like, obviously we get into the draft and we've talked plenty about it, but I don't like fully getting into it from a team perspective until free agency ends. So we can have a better feel of like, okay, they went harder here. This is open. Maybe this is now more of a late round and not an early round. I think we have a good feel for that with the Bengals right now. So I'm going to kind of target you with some specific Bengals ranges here on some players. And I think we'll obviously start with them having the 18th overall pick. And I want to, before I talk players, there's one thing about the 18th pick. How many first round grades do you have in the, we usually hear, what is it? It's 14, it's 17, it's 12. Are there 18 first round grade players this year?
To me, there are this year. To me, there's in the low 20s. It's up there. It's one of the best draft classes I've seen in terms of top end talent. And not only like first round grades, I have a lot of top 10 grades. I have more top 10 grades than 10 players in this draft. So it truly is a legitimately high end top of the class. And now I don't necessarily think getting to pick 18 is you're still going to get like a blue chip elite player. But we've seen crazier things happen. You know, guys like Derwin James have fell in drafts where you didn't expect it. So hopefully one could fall to that. But they could even be within minor trade-up range to like a real high-end prospect who's like a plug-and-play starter at a valuable position, whether it's wide receiver, whether it's offensive tackle, whether it's defensive end in this draft class. Not necessarily saying those are Bengals needs, but there's just that's where the strength of the top end of this class lies.
Let's do this offensive tackle thing. So this is going to be it for the Bengals as far as the number one thing you could see happening. It's like if we're talking about a pie percentage of what their pick will be there, 80% feels like tackle just because of the quantity and need combination. They're looking for these. We get their style. Okay. Like 6'8", 360 apparently is like their style, but they want big. They want powerful. They need a right tackle because Orlando Brown's really adamant about being a left tackle. He's here the next 3 years. So that fits them. And give me the best of that top group that could be there in terms of that kind of Bengals fit, that downhill gap power right tackle.
Well, they are in luck because this class has more of those types than truly, any class I can remember. And like high-end prospects in those types. So the guys that I would say fit that. Amarius Mims from Georgia, J.C. Latham from Alabama, Taliesa Fuaga from Oregon State. Like those are the three that I keep going back to with the Bengals that you know, depending on how the board shakes out, depending on who's there, I'd just be surprised if they didn't go that route. These are just really, really good prospects, all three of them, really freaky prospects too, in their own right. And you know, any given year, if they're say, you know, say if this was a really weak tackle class and they were really the only guy in this class, those guys could be top 10 picks. You know, that's how good these guys are as prospects. It's just, there are a bunch of others in terms of athletic tackles in this class, whether it's like Joe Alt from Notre Dame, Olufoshanu from Penn State, who are like high end pass protectors, Troy Fatina from Washington too, that, you know, will go high as well. And that people will trend towards more for like left tackles. But there are also, like I said, the three guys I mentioned are really high end run blockers and potentially high end pass blockers as well.
Of those three, I mean, how would you rank those three? Mims, obviously it's a matter of sample size and some of the injury stuff, right? Where you're just, it's more projection with him. So I guess he would probably be three amongst those, or what, between Latham, what's the pluses and minuses of the other guys?
I actually have Mims as the highest one.
Really? Just three. In pure ceiling.
Pure ceiling. And truthfully, his tape was good too, but it is, you know, 800 snaps. There's only been the past decade one other offensive tackle draft in the first round with fewer than 1,000 snaps in the FBS level. And that was Ryan Ramczyk. And that's only because he had transferred from like a D3 school and only got to play 1 year of FBS. So it's a rarity, but I watch his tape, Amarius Mims at Georgia, and it's just what he can do physically is unbelievable. And like technically, he's pretty far advanced for a guy who really hasn't played a ton of football. So I think his ceiling could be, you know, as high as anyone else in this draft classes. So to me, he's top of that. I have Taliesa Fuaga though, right behind him. I think he is a ready-made high-end run blocker at the NFL level. The power that he has just like throughout his frame, his ability to just like move guys on contact is truly special, is the best in this draft class. And I think he's gotten more reps and has improved more in pass protection to this point than those other guys have, Mims and Latham. Latham to me is kind of the wild card in that he's such a physical freak. Like he's the strongest guy in this draft class pretty easily, just massively built dude, you know, fits what they're going to, you know, those other two guys, Mims is like 340, Fuaga's in like the high 320s, but Latham's a legit 350 plus, and it's not going to ever be lower than that, right? He's like a Trent Brown. He's like an Orlando Brown. He's in that mix and could also like start at guard right away and then kick out to tackle in the future. I think he has that flexibility. So he's probably a little bit more of a project, but he might have, he's right up there in terms of the tools with those other guys.
All guys that in any year, if you're getting that at 18, you feel pretty good, especially if it's a position of need. The other side of this is, you know, the outlier could be defensive tackle is their top priority. It's not super, okay? But especially, you know, they could use a run-stopping one, and that is even thinner in this draft. Let me start here, though. Byron Murphy from Texas, Johnny Newton from Illinois are kind of the class of the three techniques, right? I mean, Murphy, how do you look at those? And is Murphy the clear above the two? Is there a chance he makes it to 18, or does that you feel like the thin nature of that class push him further up?
I think Murphy probably goes higher than that. I have him as the second highest rated defense player in this draft class. I have Dallas Turner, the Alabama edge first, and then he's second. I think he'll go highly because, again, there's really not a lot of guys with his skill set. But also the thing about him is that he's only 6 foot tall and doesn't have particularly long arms. Not everyone's going to trend towards that type of defense tackle. Some defensive line coaches just don't want that guy, want shorter arms, shorter defensive tackles because they worry about gap control and them losing their gaps and that sort of thing. So he could fall to 18. I don't think it's going to happen, though. But to me, he is the clear class, this defense tackle class. He is the one you want if you're drafting at 18. For the Bengals and their needs, Johnny Newton, the Illinois defensive tackle, he's just a pure three technique. He's not a guy who's particularly versatile. Bengals with a defensive line, they just covet versatility. I don't think they would draft him. I just flat out would be very surprised if they do.
Yeah. Let's move beyond that and go into the second day two. The Bengals have three picks. They're picking at 49. I want to talk about receivers here. Let's talk slot receivers, inside, outside versatility. Could be Tyler Boyd this year, T. Higgins in the long run. You know, there's so man, any different type of receiver you want on day two? Is this as loaded as a day two receiver class as we've kind of seen?
Yes. I cannot believe, you know, just the number of guys that I watch where I'm just like, you know, he's really good. it just keeps going. I think in my top 100, there's going to be 25 wide receivers. And that's not even,
wow.
And I almost feel bad boxing some guys out of it. But that's just the talent that's on the board. So yeah, they'll have someone there, you know, on day two, that someone at 49, even someone at 80. I think that could come in and replace what Tyler Boyd did, not necessarily be Tyler Boyd right away, but there's just that many guys in this draft class that are that talented. So, yeah, I mean, I could go through them all if you want, but like,
no, we don't need to throw it at a dart horse. Let's start this. Who's going to be selected on day two this year and be the best slot receiver amongst the rookie class?
So it depends on who like they put in the slot. There's one guy that I keep going back to with the Bengals specifically, if they want to replace kind of Tyler Boyd and have the flexibility to have him go outside in the future. And that's Jalen Polk from Washington. I think they're kind of similarly sized players, like 6'2", 200 pound range, like a guy who could play, who's like a bigger slot, tougher guy, can go over the middle, make those catches, really solid hands, really savvy receiver to pick up those yards, but then also can go on the outside and kind of win contested catches, win down the football field sometimes if you want him to as well. So he's the guy I really like just for the Bengals fit. If you're really trying to replace Tyler Boyd, and there's a bunch of other like more slot focused wide receivers who probably like have to play in the slot and not necessarily outside wide receivers, whether that's like Roman Wilson from Michigan or Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I think those guys are probably slots at the next level. Even like Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, who's a little bit more bigger, a little bit, you know, he's been called like mini Debo Samuel. Those are the guys that if you really just want a slot and you're just going to keep that Tyler Boyd role and just put him in that, then you can go that route. So there's a lot of names though. I mean, I could keep going probably with guys.
No, I know it's crazy. I mean, and you mentioned this and I think it's interesting, you know, the depth of that suggests like pushing that to 80 might not be the worst idea, because the same way we talked about offensive tackle at 18, you're getting somebody who you wouldn't normally get there. You get somebody at 80 at receiver that you would normally get at 50 in some years where it's more down just because of the sheer quantity.
100%. And I've said for the Bengals, kind of their ideal way to look at this draft in terms of like where the talent is, you want to go tackle first round. I think you're even with, you know, the Trent Brown signing, I think you want just to take advantage of the fact that it's an insane tackle class and like just keep the offensive line. And even like the tackles I mentioned can start inside a guard right away and be your tackle of the future. So you want a tackle there. You probably want to go DT depending on who's there. The two guys that I've said for the Bengals who would make sense in the second round, Devondre Sweat from Texas and Ruka Horohoro from Clemson, who are guys who are like legit versatile run stoppers. If that's what you're looking for the defensive line, I think that's what they would be looking for. Those are probably the only two names, but they're, again, not going to last until the third round, either of those guys. So they're in the second round. And then just third round, whoever's kind of there on the board, but there's going to be talent there on the board at 80 in this wide receiver class. So I think that's how I would ideally set it up. Now, obviously, when the draft comes around, it's harder to, you know, things can go pear-shaped and don't always work out how you want them to, but I do think that just how the board and how much talent at each position, that's probably your ideal scenario if you're the Bengals.
Let me drop one more thing on you. A cornerback that could be, you know, they've gone day two corner 2 years in a row, Cam Taylor Britt, DJ Turner, they kind of love restocking that pipeline and they've used that day two window to do it. Mm-hmm. And a guy that doesn't have to play right away that can develop in the background. They have treasured speed and versatility specifically with that position. Who would fit that mold? Who, when you look at day two in the corner speed versatility, are there names there that fit that this year?
So there's not a lot of, I'd say, top end speed that I think is going to be there on day two. I think a lot of the guys who ran really well at the combine, whether it's, you know, Quinnen Mitchell and Nate Wiggins, those guys are like day one guys. The day twos are kind of, in this one, they are the more versatile guys, but not necessarily the higher end athletes. So the one that I would say makes the most sense for the Bengals, who really kind of fits, I think, what they do, is Enos Rakestraw, the Missouri corner, in terms of He's played slot at Missouri. He's played on the outside of Missouri. He can tackle. He's really smooth, good in man, good in zone, just not necessarily a high-end athlete. If you're looking more maybe high-end athlete who could potentially be versatile, someone like Max Milton from Rutgers is probably more of a day two. Maybe 49 is a little rich for him, but that would be more like, you know, they have those two third rounders. So be more in that range.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. With two third rounders, it gives them a lot of flexibility to do some different things and plug some needs there. I'll give you a chance to, you know, show off your knowledge of this draft. Day three sleepers. You can really go anywhere from a Bengals perspective at that point. You know, we could be talking about running backs. We could be talking about, you know, traitsy tight ends. We could go anywhere. What's some great day three sleepers that you'd love to see end up in Cincinnati?
Yeah, I'll give a couple of pass catchers, because I think that is where I would just stack up in this draft, because even continue to do so on day three. The two guys I would love to, if you haven't addressed slot yet, to pick up on day three for them are Malik Washington from Virginia. He's short, but he's not necessarily small. He's like 5'8", but it's kind of like Tank Dell. Now, Tank Dell was actually small, but like he plays strong and had like a bigger wingspan for a guy who's 5'8". Malik Washington's 5'8", but then like 190 pounds, built kind of like a running back, produced out off the charts at Virginia, really good hands, really savvy, and he tested really well at the combine too. So, but just may fall to day three because one, sheer numbers, and two, the fact that he's 5'8". The other one's Luke McCaffrey from Rice, a guy who just switched to wide receiver late in his career, started at quarterback in Nebraska early on in his career, transferred to Rice, switches to wide receiver, high-end athlete, obviously has the bloodlines. His dad was obviously NFL wide receiver, brother Christian. So those are two guys who I'm really intrigued at as slot wide receivers going into day three, who could, like, I'd say they'd be Puka Nacua, but don't necessarily have this massive transition to the NFL, who could just step in and start, but are only falling to that range because there's so many other guys in this class.
God, it sure feels like you can almost bank on there being a couple of Puka Nacua types. Just because the sheer quantity of receivers, yeah. We've seen so many receivers have this instant impact. Teams are going to copycat and be more willing to give those guys chances to become that. And it just feels like that's something that could be a part of this year. I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated to see it. We'll see how this draft falls. But Mike, I appreciate your time. You are the expert of experts, and we'll have to bring you back. There will be more questions. We will be getting far more specific. We're only going to get later into the rounds. We'll be diving into punter analysis before too long. So when we get there, we'll have to circle back and come back around for you.
For sure, Paul. Happy to do it.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too.